This week, we're bringing you some of the best Today in Focus episodes from the year so far. Today, an episode from May. Why so many of us are falling for lockdown scams and losing thousands of pounds in the process.
Right, so I was just going to start actually, just sort of thinking back for the past year, and I'm going to be very honest here, I bought a lot of stuff online during lockdown. Did you find yourself shopping a lot more?
Yeah, I did actually. And I'm particularly fond of creams that make you look 20 years younger, you know, stuff like that.
This is Rose Driscoll. And like many of us, she's been getting a lot of deliveries over the past few months. So when back in December, she got an email about a package she was expecting, she didn't think anything of it.
I was in town, actually feeling quite impatient about this cream. And I heard a ping on my phone and it was an email. It said, your driver has tried to deliver a package for you and it's our policy or something like that for you to pay £2 for us to deliver it again. And there was a link and you just pressed the link and it was so easy to put all your stuff in. It was unbelievable.
What details did they ask you for? Do you remember?
Oh, you know, this, that, the long number, the sort code, everything. I mean, it's so embarrassing to say it now, but that's what I did.
Fearing she'd given too much away, Rose immediately contacted her bank and cancelled her card. The face cream arrived and she thought nothing more of it. But little did she know that filling in this form would set off a chain of events that led her to a mistake she never thought she'd make. Every year, thousands of us fall victim to scams. And in lockdown, with so many of us ordering online, it's become even easier to persuade us to part with our most personal financial information. You may have received one of these messages yourself. This is what happens if you do what they tell you. From The Guardian, I'm Rachel Humphreys. Today in Focus, the delivery scams costing us hundreds of millions of pounds. Rose, you got your face cream and you cancelled your card and then carried on with your life, really. What happened next?
Well, nothing. And then on February the 8th, about 2 o'clock, I got this phone call and I was in the middle of an Arabic lesson on Zoom. It was a bank's number. His name was something like Gary Chapman. It would have been a name made up. And they charged in by saying something like, oh, Miss Driscoll, I'm not sure you're aware. This is a Halifax speaking. We don't normally call you. I'm afraid to tell you that your bank account has been compromised, and gave me the sort code and account number and the long number on the phone. And of course, I was immediately hooked and just said, you know, that he was very anxious to secure my account and keep it safe.
And what did he tell you had happened?
He said that since December, when you received your email scam, I believe, several scammers had tried to get into my account and buy, you know, things like kitchen equipment, deposits for cars. I said, well, I haven't had anything taken from my account. And he said, that's because we've been taking care of it. We've stepped in before it was taken out. It was incredible. Absolutely incredible. His confidence, his cheek. This was a man who, I have to say, partly scared me, partly fascinated me. I knew that there was something not right about it. And I guess there was a sort of grooming going on, you know, that kind of stuff. Or don't worry, we know that normally the bank doesn't ring you, but this is not a normal time. This is coronavirus time. And the Halifax certainly wouldn't, you know, got a good reputation with our customers of looking after you and all this stuff. And then he asked me to open my app because I've got online banking on my phone. He knew everything that was on there, Rachel. I mean, everything.
So he knew what your app looked like. Did he know about your accounts?
Yeah, it was almost like he'd got it up on his screen. And at the time, I'd got £8,400 in my account because I'd been saving up. And I was going to give all three of my children some money. So I think it was £3,700 he wanted me to put into a safe place, he said. Safe place being the Barclays Bank.
So he said that you needed to take thousands of pounds from your own account and put into an account of a completely different bank to keep it safe.
Yes, absolutely. And I should have put the phone down and I didn't. And as I say, my brain was sort of all over the place. He knew all about the scam. He knew my transactions. And I was persuaded, if you like, to part with altogether, yeah, about £8,400, I'm ashamed to say. And he was about to help himself to my savings. And then my app suddenly crashed. And I just don't know, you know, what would have happened if that had been the case. And he quickly said, oh, well, my manager will be ringing you within the hour. And obviously, I was left then with my current account empty. And I was going, but what's going to happen to my account? Are you sure you're not a scam? And he's saying, no, I've told you, Miss Driscoll, you're fine, you're in safe hands, all that sort of stuff. And I came off the phone and I knew immediately that I'd been had. And I have to say, my heart was all over the place. And I dashed down to town to Halifax. And of course, I think he knew that the branches all shut at 2:30. And of course, it was shut and I had nobody to help.
That sounds really scary, actually. This man had persuaded you to part with thousands of pounds and it could have been much more. What was going through your head at this point?
I was absolutely wild in my head. I was breathless. I felt like passing out. I suppose I was panicking. I went back home and then I phoned to Halifax. And then I got this sort of rather stern young woman saying, well, you did give your permission. I'm afraid we can't guarantee that you'll get your money back. I was totally devastated, I think is the word.
And this was happening at a very difficult time. We were in the middle of a strict lockdown and the pandemic was affecting us all in different ways. How are you doing?
You know, I had a horrible COVID, actually. I'd lost a very good friend who I absolutely adored. I suppose I was just like bombarded from all sides by all these horrible grief-like feelings that it made me realise how I was never going to call anybody stupid anymore for being in this position, because we never know what people are going through. And at any one time, we could all be vulnerable in that way.
Hilary Osborne, you're The Guardian's money and consumer editor. We've just heard from Rose about the awful experience she went through and how, as she says, this can happen to anyone. And I think a lot of us have noticed we've got more of these messages recently. One indication of the scale of this comes from the National Cybersecurity Centre, which in December was getting reports of over 500 fake DPD emails being received a day. And you've reported that millions of pounds are being lost as a result of these scams. Why are so many of us falling for these messages?
I mean, some of the scammers are so clever that it could even look like it's coming from the real company. They're able to spoof the numbers, they're able to set up the text. So it often can look very, very genuine. And in the moment, it's very easy to miss them.
Yeah, I could imagine that you'd be the kind of person considering your job that wouldn't fall for one of these.
I'd like to think so, but that's what everybody thinks. Sometimes you're doing five different things at once, and if you are expecting a parcel and it's something that you're keen to get your hands on, then maybe you can get caught up in it. So I'll never say never. I wouldn't be that brave.
How much of your reporting has focused on scams like these?
It's been a big deal for years, but I would say over the past year, we've seen an awful lot more of it coming in from readers. Some of that is the more you write about something, the more you become the place that they go to. But I really think when people have been at home, the fraudsters have stepped up what they're doing. They know how the banks operate, they know how people operate, and they're getting better at preying on those things.
Rosie's story, which involves a fraudulent email and then being persuaded to transfer money from her bank account, is that typical of these delivery scams? I mean, how do they work?
So there seem to be two different ways these work. We put a call out to readers and we got more than 120 responses in just a couple of days. And they fell into two camps, the people who'd been scammed. We had people who had their cards used very quickly after they had put in their details. So it seemed very low level. Someone said £300 had been spent on a scooter. Someone else had sort of a similar payment on Amazon. But a considerable number of people had a call later on saying it was from the bank's fraud department and then trying to get them to transfer big sums of money.
Yeah, and it did really catch up by surprise. And I think what's also shocking about her story is the amount of money, you know, of £8,000. Is that typical of some of the other people you heard from?
There was one case where someone had transferred 35,000 in total. and another where it was 20,000. I think once they gain your trust, they can talk you into moving however much you've got in the bank.
What details are people giving out in the first instance when they get those text messages and they click on those links in them?
I think it is fairly mundane information. So like your phone number, obviously, when they send out the text, when you click on the link, you effectively confirm that phone number. And then if you've put in your address details and you've put in your bank details, if they are going to phone you and say they're from the fraud department, then it's very easy for them to find out from the sort code which bank you're with. And then once they've got that conversation going with you, then you're the one who's going to move the money. So they don't need your password. They don't need to know a great deal to make this work for them.
In terms of who's being targeted, I've received these messages and I know a lot of my friends have. But is there a certain group of people that are more likely to go along with these?
Before I saw the responses to our call out, I probably would have thought that it was maybe older people who were more likely to fall for this. But no, I think at the moment, everyone is doing online shopping, everybody has a mobile phone, so everybody's getting them.
And the consequences of this for people like Rose can be devastating, can't they?
I think one of the things that doesn't get talked about enough is the psychological impact on people. I think people's main drive in life is that they trust people and they want to do the right thing and they want to protect themselves. And then they get a call from someone saying that their account has been compromised. It instantly puts them in a fearful position. And then they're talked into doing something that is completely against what they would normally do. And then when they realise what's happened, people do say they feel silly or they feel ashamed, and that makes them feel very nervous afterwards. It's really, really terrible.
Rose, after you were persuaded to transfer that £8,400 out of your account, you reported the fraud to Halifax, your bank, and they began investigating. What was the next you heard from them?
I got a letter from the fraud team that basically said it was my own negligence that had caused it. And they said there's a small amount of money we put into your account. And the amount was £30.20.
£30.20 is what they gave you?
Yes, it was an insult.
What was that supposed to be for? Why is that the money that they gave you?
Well, I found out later that that was all the money that had been left by the criminal gang, because apparently what happens is you put the money into the account and they've got people outside waiting to go in and get it. They go in, they take it, even before anybody knows what's going on.
Okay, so your bank gave you £30 because that is what was left in that Barclays account that you paid your over £8,000 into. How did you feel about this at the time?
I think by that time, Rachel, I think I'd gone beyond feeling anything, because I think by that time, I mean, we're talking now, you know, through to the end of March, April time, I'd got used to the idea that I was going to lose the money, really.
You felt resigned, but you didn't completely give up, did you? And you kept calling Halifax to try and recover the money. You eventually had a breakthrough. Tell me what happened.
One morning I was determined to ring very early because you weren't in so much of a queue. And I got this really nice young man. His name was Elliot. And he said, "You've been dealt a really bad blow by Halifax. I'm going to take out a complaint on your behalf." About 2 weeks later, I had a phone call from Elliot's boss called Nicola. And she wanted to investigate what had happened. And she had an hour-long conversation with me. And then I got an email from her the next day to say, "I've tried to ring you. Can you ring me back?" I tried to ring her and I got one of her workforce. And he said, "She's awarded you the money, all of it back. £200 compensation for all the phone calls you've had to sit and wait on." And he said, "And one thing I do want to say to you is I don't ever want you to blame yourself for this. You'll get a lot of texts now because people will know that you're vulnerable, you know." And I mean, I get them every day, Rachel. I get them every single day.
Coming up, millions are being lost every year to these scams. So what is being done to stop them? Hillary, it's great that Rose got her money back, but it took months and you can hear how painful this has been for her. How does the shame of being a victim of this crime affect people reporting it to the police?
I think it means that we don't see the whole picture. I think people do feel that their banks won't be able to help them. So I think sometimes they write off their money when actually they would be able to get it back if they did something about it. I think the police are probably not hearing most of the stories either. So I think it means that the scale of it is just completely underestimated.
Rose says that the scammers who contacted her were very convincing. Who are the people behind this?
I think this is one of the issues we've had with it, is that you feel that it's chances often, but it's not. It is proper organised crime. We're talking about large sums of money. We're talking about people who are willing to invest the time to talk the people into handing that over. One of the other people I spoke to was getting a call every day from the same person, and he was really sort of coaching her in how to move the money, what to say when she went into the bank. So it is proper criminal gangs. It's not sort of two-bit organisations behind it.
And is this a crime that's on the increase?
I asked Action Fraud, who record these kinds of cases, and I said, well, what data have you got to show over the last year what's been happening? The monetary losses they'd received at Action Fraud, I think it was just about the DPD fraud, they definitely increased in the run-up to Christmas. But we haven't got any figures since Christmas. The first half of last year, this kind of fraud where you're asked to transfer money, there was £200 million lost through it. So it is quite colossal.
That's absolutely
astonishing,
huge.
Isn't it?
Yeah, completely. I mean, what's being done to try and stop this thing? That's an enormous amount of money.
There's a couple of things. So there is a service where you can forward any text messages, but I don't think they're getting separated out and looked at. On the banking side, there is a bit of movement. NatWest said that they were going to let you put a limit on how much you could transfer from your bank each day. So they're sort of letting you add a bit more friction into the process. And there's new sort of rules around banking. A lot of them now sort of ask more questions if you phone up and you want to transfer money. And if you're online, there's the new confirmation of payee, where if you go and transfer the money and the account name doesn't match, you get told. But with the people I spoke to, quite often the people on the phone pretending to be from the fraud department had all the answers for that and would kind of say, oh, don't worry, just press that. So it still seems quite easy for the criminals, unfortunately.
It sounds like banks have quite a lot in place then, but to me it feels like this is more there to protect ourselves from our own money rather than target thieves. And I find that interesting because in Rose's case, the bank was the one that paid out and gave her back her £8,000. Is that typical of what you've heard from other people you've spoken to?
I was really pleasantly surprised by how easily people had got their money back from the banks, because often when we've written about scams in the past in the money pages, the people have come to us when they've been banging their head against the wall trying to get the cash back, and we've stepped in and started talking to the banks and managed to make something happen. So that was one thing that really stood out. If a bank's paying out this kind of money, they must be doing something behind the scenes with law enforcement, because they're not going to want to keep paying out that kind of cash.
And when it comes to law enforcement, the police are working with the banks to try and stop these frauds. It's been reported that last year, a banking industry funded police unit prevented £20 million worth of fraud and recovered thousands of compromised card numbers. But we have talked about how a lot of these crimes aren't reported because of the shame involved. It feels like it's mostly down to us to protect ourselves from these text and email scams. What's your advice?
It's very rare that you get a text asking you to go and give your details that is genuine. So I'd say, just if in doubt, just ignore those texts. But I'd say as well, lots of the people I spoke to thought things were okay, and then they talked to a member of their family about what they'd done And then they said, oh, that doesn't sound right. I think that's a really important part of protecting yourself. People have sort of different perspective, and they may have read something about it the week before and tell you that. You know, nothing is so urgent that you have to reply before you've checked it or spoken to somebody about it.
How are people getting hold of our numbers in the first place? Is there a way to stop that from happening?
I think generally they just have these generators that like fire off messages to every combination of the number. So they only know your number is actually real when you respond to it in some way. So the best thing really is to ignore it.
What strikes me about this kind of fraud is that it has adapted so neatly to the way we've been living our lives over the past few months. Is the problem here, Hilary, that even if we manage to crack down on this delivery scam, criminals are so savvy they can always adapt their methods to target us in different ways?
They definitely see what people are concerned with and pile into that. So over the last year, we've seen various COVID scams, some of them saying, click here to find out about the vaccination. They're the same scam, but they dress them up in different ways. So yeah, when we're all back out and about, it will be something else they find to sort of disguise it as. But I mean, they're fundamentally all the same thing.
What is your sort of overwhelming feeling about this at the moment? Is it anger? Because I mean, you sound understandably really angry about this.
I'm angry because I think it's just such a terribly cruel thing to do and an easy thing to do, to take advantage of the situation where death's all around us and suffering's all around us. To add to that seems to me to be such a very cynical thing to do.
And what would you say to someone listening who might, you know, just think, oh, you know, I would always be able to spot something like that?
You know, I would have said that too. And I don't think anybody's ever above being tricked. If you think you're never going to get tricked, then pride goes before a ball, really.
How are you doing now after all of this? How are you feeling?
I still feel very shaken up. It's not easy for me to talk to you about it, but I've been fine. It sort of helps to get it out, you know. I'll probably go away from here and have a bit of a weep, actually.
Oh, Rose, thank you so much for speaking to us. And one last thing. Have you got your eye on another face cream?
Yeah, there's a sleep cocoon one that's rather nice. But I think I'm going to look out for another retinol one, actually, Rachel.
You more than deserve that face cream, Rose. I hope that purchase goes a whole lot better than the last one. And thank you so much for speaking to me. That was Rose Driscoll. You can read about her experience and of others Hilary spoke to in a piece she wrote last week called Delivery Tech Scams, the Nasty New Fraud Wave Sweeping the UK. Find it at theguardian.com. In response to this episode, a spokesperson for Halifax told us that Ms. Driscoll did not follow the warnings which were presented to her when she tried to make the payments from her account. However, after a review of the circumstances surrounding her case, Halifax said that they provided a refund of the full amount she lost, including a payment to acknowledge that we could have done more to ask for information when she first reported the fraud. Halifax go on to say that it is important to treat every email, message or call you're not expecting with caution, avoid clicking on links asking for your bank details, and pay close attention to any warnings when banking online. They add, your bank or a genuine company will never ask you to move money to a different account. And if anyone does, it's definitely a scam, no matter how genuine it may appear. That's it for today. Thanks to Rose and to Hilary for speaking to us. This episode was produced by Ned Carter-Miles. Sound design was by Sammy Elanami. The executive producers are Archie Bland and Phil Maynard. We'll be back tomorrow.